Do you know that the solar eclipse happening on April 8th is a lot more crucial than you think? Jesus spoke about Matthew that this evil, adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign shall be given to it except for the sign that happened in the days of the prophet Jonah. In Luke, it says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be as the coming of the Son of Man. But you will not believe the path of the solar eclipse will take. It'll cross over several towns named Nineveh Rapture, Indiana. But that's not even the crazy part. It also goes over the Ark, and it'll happen under the constellation Cetus, which means whale, which is what swallowed up Jonah. Subscribe right now if you want to learn about this.
All right.
Yes. Now, dispensationalism.
Well, the thing is,
it's the real Ark. It's one American built in Kentucky. Come on.
Oh, it's going over the kids. It's going over the fake Ark.
It's not the real Ark.
Dude, but there's a lot of Catholics on this bandwagon. I don't know, man. Evangelicals are a hoot. I've been having a lot of arguments with Protestants on Twitter these last few days, man.
One of my YouTube channels I kind of guilt watch.
Wow, Rob, you're frozen smiling. It's funny.
Oh, that's not good. Oh, no, don't make it bigger. What am I doing?
He was frozen for you too, right, Nick?
Yeah, I'm frozen for everyone.
Yeah, it was frozen for me too. Yeah.
Still frozen. No, I kind of like that picture, Rob. Just leave it.
Just leave it.
Good,
okay.
It's a good still pic. But yeah, I can't believe some of the reactions you get, man. Oh, you're moving now.
Especially when you're clearly trolling too.
Clearly. I mean, so they were talking about the good thief on the cross, right?
And they're like,
they're like, how did the good thief get saved? And I said, he got saved because Mary prayed for him at the foot of the cross. And they went ballistic. This is heresy.
So Anthony tweets out, it was in the Bible. You just didn't understand it.
So God only hears prayers in Latin. So, where does it say that in the Bible? It's there. You didn't understand that it was in Latin.
Or launches, the Bible wasn't written in Latin. No duh.
You think? Dude, it's just pretty absurd some of the things you could get. Because I was so sick of the five solas guy trolling Catholics that, yeah, you look like
you're... When I was frozen.
So the eclipse thing, I honestly haven't paid any attention to it whatsoever. But I do see a lot of videos, typically you get it from the more charismatic type Catholics, but I know like Don's wife is doing a pilgrimage with it. Like, I don't know if they're following the eclipse or something. I don't know what that means, but yeah, I don't know. It's pretty bonkers the way people are reacting to this thing. Is there anything actually significant about it?
Not really, no.
It's cool.
I mean, total solar eclipses happen around the world fairly often, and it's just kind of rare that we've had two in 7 years now in the U.S., but, you know, they're not that rare.
So you won't see it from anywhere? You have to be in, like, certain places to see it?
I think so where I am, I'm going to get about 75%. You in New York City might get 85 or 90, but you have to be in the path of totality to see the full eclipse.
But I'll say, and how long does it last? Like, is it
2 minutes? I think it's supposed. I think the whole like period from what I read was something like from noon to three. If you're like in the direct line from like start to finish of the whole thing, I don't know though. That's a long time.
So I drove down to be in the path of totality for the one in 2017. And the whole, like, it starts, you start to notice it darkening.
You know,
the time you start to notice it when it's fully over is about 10 minutes. But, like, it's completely dark for, like, maybe two or three.
Yeah. It's going right over my house. So there's tons of people driving out to Central Texas, like, with their campers and stuff to see this thing.
I see Margo's talking to us, Rob. I sent Margo a DM earlier.
Oh, she might just be talking to you. I don't know about
Yeah, she's probably not talking to you. But well, the thing is, there are a lot of strange things going on with it. Like, there are a lot of like things lining up where it is the Feast of the Annunciation. We're getting a new DDF document that day. Like, there's just several things all coalesce. They're firing up that Hadron Collider. And
is it the Feast of the Annunciation like in the new calendar? Because
no, well, I'm pretty sure switched it. It's supposed to be March 25th, right?
But because of Holy Week and all of that.
Yeah, so they didn't want to. They wanted to let Easter be its own thing, so they moved it to the 8th.
Okay, cool. I get you.
So,
It's pretty crazy because there's that. You guys know that. I mean, it was like all scuttlebutt 2 weeks ago, but that Divine Mercy group that has been quote receiving, you know, revelation supposedly, it's like 20 minutes from my house. It's really close, and all the local Catholics around here, particularly like the Facebook Gen Catholics, man, between that and then the eclipse, that's like their, you know, dispensational Israel propaganda style stuff, but in the Catholic sphere. It's crazy.
But it really is, right? Like if you're part of those more charismatic flavor Catholicism, like you are. Well, the reason I started with that video was because I wanted people to see like a lot of the things you're hearing are very much Protestant influenced.
Oh yes,
like, very much Protestant influence. Like,
and not even that. Like specifically, like your weirdo evangelical Protestants.
Mm-hmm. I sent you a video, Rob, with the politician. Wait, did I send it? Actually,
I don't think so. I don't think I sent it.
I got to send this to you because, it's somebody just go because we talk about it a lot. Just how, so much of our foreign policy is influenced by crazy Christianity.
Yep.
Like, all right, so I'm sending it to the thing now. Let's play this real quick, just because this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about where a lot of the things that I see Catholics getting influenced by really do derive from some of this crazier strands of Protestantism, and people need to chill out and realize like this isn't Catholic.
100%.
I didn't edit this at all, so.
We talked to members of Congress about Israel and the U.S.'s relationship.
All right, go.
There are some biblical prophecies that say that control of Jerusalem by the Jews is important to the second coming of the Christ.
This entire matter is based upon faith of our maker, of our creator. But it's also faith of a chosen people.
This one, she's my favorite. Yep, there she is.
She's the Capitol Police.
There's a new government in Israel. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of the U.S. relationship with Israel?
There have been two nations created.
Oh, she's not going to say what.
Israel.
Oh, my gosh.
I will bless both. I will honor both. I will do all I can to stand and defend them.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Take care.
Like you have to, you guys, these are your politicians that are actually voting to send money to go to war.
Billions upon billions based on insane
prophecies that aren't.
The role of religious extremism here in the U.S. funding and shaping the conflict. I mean, there are a lot of folks who are part of the evangelical movement that want
to support Israel.
And we don't really kind of see that. That same kind of constituent group pushing the other way.
Yeah, I would label the Baptist or the evangelical community as extreme because I feel like they're following the scripture and what the scripture says about Israel. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. I mean, they take it literal, and I'm one of those people.
You know, there's some Christian Zionists that do believe in some of these.
I mean, we don't have to finish this, but I mean, they're very. This is why it's so important that we do discuss some of the harder issues when it comes to Israel, because they try to frame it in a way where we're saying supersessionism and things like that and replacement theology.
When really, if you that's don't just Christianity.
Right. If you don't really understand that the church is the new Israel, you'll fall for this stuff, right? You'll fall 100%. For all these things. And it is very important that we have the conversation with people and that they get that when the Bible is saying, you know, he who defends Israel, he's talking about a totally different thing than modern Israel.
Like these people have more of a love for the state of Israel than they do for even the conception, like even in their wrong view of just the church. So like as an example, all of this stuff goes back to the radical reformation. So everyone knows about like Luther and Calvin, right?
This goes back to John of Leighton and the Anabaptists.
Exactly. So like the Anabaptists, they were the guys who denied basically like all church structure, period. And it was just you and your Bible should interpret stuff. Now this moves on, hits the United States, hits it particularly in the Baptist streams, right? We, of course, have talked about like the history of dispensationalism and stuff like that. But then when dispensational rises up, they go to these passages like in Genesis where it talks about, you know, if everyone who blesses you will be blessed, everyone who curses you will be cursed. They read Israel into that because of their several hundred years of it's just Jesus, me, and the Bible doing our thing. And notice how they will defend tooth and nail the state of Israel, but yet they will trash the church.
Yeah.
So who benefits from this, God or Satan? It's pretty easy to see how who is motivating which perspective, who's behind which perspective.
You get so frustrated when you're having conversations with Protestants because they really, I mean, I'm not going to say about the mainline Protestants who actually understand the Reformation and stuff and things like that, but the modern evangelical who really thinks mm-hmm. they could pick up the Bible, read it in the year 2024, and have a full grasp of what is going on in scripture, and they'll pull verses out of context. It's like they've never really thought about the logic, the logical end of their conclusions, where if you just go back, they really do believe that the church just popped up out of existence in the year 16. The idea that the Catholic Church is a pagan church means that Jesus comes, ascends to heaven, a real church pops up for 200 years, and then pagans take it over and it goes into obscurity. And so that means Jesus's mission fails after 200 years and there's mm-hmm. no church for 1200 years. It's just so preposterous that, or they really think there are these Protestant churches around for all mm-hmm. the Middle Ages, I guess. I don't know. It's just so silly what they believe.
Some of them hold on to that. They call it like, sometimes they're called like Baptist successionism or proto-Protestants. That's what some Presbyterians will call it. But yeah, it's just like, how can you find like Protestant style Waldensians, etc. I'll give them a pass on the Waldensians and the Lollards, but Cathars. Then like, yeah, when you get to the Cathars and the Albigensians, as a Dominican myself, I start to chuckle because I'm like, so you're going to claim that the group who denies the Trinity and is basically Gnostic, so believes that like John the Baptist was like a false prophet who tried to impede Christ's mission, and that homosexual relations are okay, that is somehow in the stream of Baptist churches going back to the year 33. That's pretty crazy. But then you bring up, Anthony, it's a good point. So they'll call the church pagan, but not the state of Israel. One's a chosen people of God, the other one's pagan.
So my father, a cradle Catholic, is 100% supporter of Israel, and he's very stubborn about it when we speak about it. But that is because your father is influenced by neocon politics and this Protestant evangelical Zionism. It's crazy. And the way they frame it in political terms is Israel is this beacon of democracy in the mm-hmm. Middle East, but they're not. they're just not.
They're a beacon of mm-hmm. the same values we have. But when I say that, I don't mean democracy. I mean all the worst values, you know, we have.
Like the worst ends of capitalism, materialism.
Yeah.
Materialism is what they have. So
beacon of neoconservatism in the Middle East.
But that's because so much of our politics is influenced by Israel. Like it's this mm-hmm. this back and forth relationship. And people are trying to frame this as an anti-Semitism argument, and it's really not at all. It's just you have to understand what a lot of this comes from. A lot of this comes from Protestantism, which is why things got so tense on the internet during Holy Week, is because Protestant Christians think they're defending the Bible in these conversations. And it's just, that's not what's happening. They're just misinterpreting scripture. And that's what, I think that's why things got so tense between, in those, I'm going to leave it alone, cause I don't want to, you know, we've discussed it already, but all right, so let's jump on all right, so I'm going to give you guys a rundown of all the stories we're talking about tonight. We have a lot to talk about. We're definitely going to discuss the Richard Dawkins clip. We're going to discuss the Cardinal Seurat thing. We're going to discuss Bishop Elegante slams Pope Francis over attack on people who refuse to get the shot. France cracks down on a priest who called same-sex relations sinful. And then in the local segment tonight, the Trad Recovery Conference came out with their own commercial. And it's very, very interesting how my commercial was uncharitable. And I got a phone call because it was so uncharitable. But their commercial is basically like stealing my entire idea.
It's like, you know, the how we say the left can't meme.
Yeah, that's exactly. This is an exact scenario of the left can't meme. But there's a lot that goes into this. And it also goes into an exchange Mike Lewis and I had today. Because Mike Lewis tweeted, why do some Catholics become angry when other Catholics express hope that most or all people will be saved and that hell is empty? Why do some Catholics think the constant threat of hell is necessary for living a life of virtue and holiness? So I responded to him. I said, because we believe Jesus when he spoke about hell, and we do not want people to be misled by a lie. So he, you know, I think a lot of what the Trad Recovery Conference is dealing with and what Mike Lewis is saying here, there's a connection there. And I think a lot of it has to do with this very feelings-based emotionalism. And a lot of it is just rejecting some of the harder things because they sound 100%. Difficult. And it all goes into the hierarchy of the church and a lot of effeminacy in the church. And people afraid to handle hard truths in the faith.
Like, I'm sorry, but you can't point to one of these post-trads that are still as rigorous in their faith as a traditionalist. It's not that because they're just as faithful now and they didn't like the attitude of the traditional mass. No, they found it too hard.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more than that. I think it is that, but I think it's deeper than that. So we'll get into that on locals. We'll read the Mike Lewis article and we'll try to dig into some of that stuff. So if you guys are not subscribed to our locals, we do a lot of things over there that we can't do over here. Especially we're going to discuss some inner dynamics over at Meaning of Catholic over on locals tonight, some behind the scenes arguing that we can't discuss publicly. So that's what we'll be doing there. So, all right, Rob, you want to bring up the Cardinal Seurat story?
Yeah. Let me go through the 30 stories you sent me here. Give me a second.
Yes, I said that. I want to do the Richard Dawkins clip too, man. Like I'm really excited to talk about that. Cause I have a lot to say on that, but all right, we'll do Cardinal Seurat and then we'll do Dawkins. I think Nick's got a lot to say on Dawkins too.
Oh, Dawkins.
All right. So Pope Francis says appointing Cardinal Seurat to Roman Curia may have been a mistake.
First off, racism right away.
straight up racism.
Pope Francis claimed that Cardinal Seurat, strong critic of fiducia supplicans, was manipulated by separatist groups as head of the Vatican's liturgy offices called the African prelate bitter. That's pretty ruthless, man. All right, let's scroll down.
Pot calling the kettle black. Pun intended.
Oh, man. Pope Francis said that appointing Cardinal Seurat to the congregation may have been a mistake. In a book-length interview titled The Successor, which is set to be published April 3rd, Francis addressed his relationship with his predecessor, Pope Benedict, during his interview with Spanish journalist Javier Martinez Brocal. Francis said, maybe I made a mistake in naming Cardinal Seurat prefect for the... So Francis named him... The prefect?
Yeah, 2014.
Wow, maybe I made a mistake naming it. But like, did he really not know Seurat had more traditional leanings? I mean, was it so early in his pontificate that he just did? Maybe he was just, because early in the pontificate, this is before for some banjo music. Oh, also, guys, we have enough money for the camera equipment for me to do my man on the street interviews. So we have to come up with a question list. So we're going to do that also over in locals. So Francis is elected 2013. 2014, he appoints Cardinal Seurat, but he knows Seurat is a hermeneutic of continuity guy. He knows he loves the more traditional, like the more traditional flavor of Novus Ordoism.
I'm guessing that transition had kind of been in the works under Benedict. And they just went along with it, you know, since it was within a year of Francis coming to power. So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just like, it could also be like a political move in the sense that like in this book. So like Marshall talked about today, Marshall and Gordon on there separate shows. I kind of wanted to meme it. I was like, wow, both of them are talking about the same issue at the exact same time today.
Yeah, I watched Gordon on my way home, and then I flipped over to Taylor, but it was too short. Like, I was pulling up to my house as they were doing, but I saw that too. It was like right on my feed, TNT, but separate streams.
Exactly. I was just like, RIP TNT, man. But yeah, I'm wondering if like it was a political move, because one of the things that they brought up in their like clips today was that there was a ton. It was clear that there was a massive liberal voting bloc that was trying to get Pope Francis in 2005.
The original, when Benedict got elected.
Yeah. And then another obviously massive block in 2012 or 2013 rather. And so I'm wondering if this is more of a political bone, if you will, to the right, because it clear, like for all of us, we're hindsight's 2020. We're just finding out how like liberal a lot of these prelates are. But since they all kind of know each other in that conclave, I wonder if his thought was, okay, the liberals clearly support me. Let me like throw a bone to the conservatives and kind of get them on board as I kind of like edge them down into the pool of all the reforms I'm wanting to do.
So also you have to realize 2014, he's there from 2014 to 2021. That's 7 years. And he got out at 21 because he hit the retirement age of 75. So I guess Francis also could have been thinking, well, this isn't a long stint, you know, he'll be out. Well, 7 years is a decent amount of time. Maybe Francis didn't have the liturgical changes in mind. He didn't, like, I don't think he was thinking about traditionis at this point. He's thinking more Amoris Laetitia kind of stuff. And he's thinking, okay, how can we start to loosen some of these things? And it wasn't until people, because look, you can say what you want, but when the pandemic hits in 2020, people flocked to the traditional mass. Right. Yeah. And it's after the Summer of Shame, after, this is all before McCarrick too. You have to it's a totally different church.
Yeah.
Before McCarrick. Okay. So McCarrick hits, and that's when TNT blows up. That's when Taylor starts going and
blow up as in become popular, not break up.
Right. That's So they start to gain popularity, and the resistance to Francis, because there's no resistance to Francis early on. We're all doing the normie Pope's plane thing because we're like, well, he's the Pope, right? It's 2014, 2050. Even when Amoris comes out, you still have 95% of the Catholic commentariat still defending the Pope and Pope's planing. And it isn't until McCarrick drops that you start getting the, what's going on here, man? This is something going on here. So that spirals into the trad movement really getting some traction. So that traction really picks up steam during the pandemic, man. Like I start going to Latin Mass in 2017, 2018. That Summer of Shame is when I start going. But my parish explodes with growth during the pandemic. And that whole scenario church-wide, they start seeing us as being this little tiny speck in the distance. They're going, oh, wait a minute. These guys are picking up some steam. They're actually starting to gather some power over here. So they come down and he slams down with traditionis. Now, during this whole thing, this is when he has Syrah. It's right before traditionis. Syrah gets canned and then Roach gets put in, and Roach within 6 months of being in there comes down with traditionis.
Kind of like how within 6 months of Tuco being in there, all those documents came out.
Exactly. Yeah. So Mike, you're in the thread between me and Mike Lewis, because you wrote a response also. But yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, you have to really think about the trajectory that's going on here. Like, he named Syrah, and there's no talk about an Amazonian rite yet. None of that. No. Like, this is Francis. I don't know, man. It's a very strange situation. All right, bring that article back up. Let's read through some more of it. So from there, he was manipulated by separatist groups. What separatist groups? But he is a good man. Like, look at the condescending.
It sounds like an Argentinian politician right there. Separatist groups. Not schismatic groups, separatist groups. Like,
from there, he is manipulated by separatist groups, but he is a good man. It's such a backhanded compliment. At times, I have the impression that working in the Roman Curia made him a little bitter.
I think working for you made him a little bit. Yeah. Come on now.
You're the boss.
Yeah. The African cardinal is known for his fidelity to church teaching and tradition. However, he rarely criticized Francis during his stint as the prefect for the CDW and the discipline of the sacraments from 2014 to 2021. Recently, though, Cardinal Seurat strongly condemned the idea of same-sex blessings put forth in the heterodox Vatican Declaration. That's a little bit of editorializing on Lifeside's part.
It is true.
It's accurate, but it's still editorial. Stating that the document proposes a heresy that gravely undermines the church, the body of Christ, because it is contrary to the Catholic faith and tradition. He said he was very proud of the African bishops for rejecting fiducius supplicans. It's just interesting, man.
It sounds like he needs to go to the Trad Recovery Conference. Just all his bitterness and get out of a separatist group.
Man, this whole book sounds like it's going to be a strange one, right? Because he's not a successor
to Benedict.
He's a successor to Benedict.
Yeah, you're right.
He's the successor to Benedict. I know what you're saying. He's breaking with the hermeneutic of continuity is what you mean.
But it is the logical continuation. You're right.
So, but even listening to Gordon's breakdown today, some of the things he says in the interview make you wonder, is his memory bad or is he lying?
Mm-hmm. I think he's convinced himself of what the truth is.
That's possible, right? Because I don't want to accuse him of lying. I mean, look, the guy's, how old is he? 78.
Oh, he's older. He's like
85 or something.
Okay. Yeah. It's like early to mid 80s.
He's in his
80s. He's 87.
Oh, 87. So he was elected at 77 and he's 87. So look, I have my grandmother's 87. And when I talk to her, she repeats the same stories a lot. Like I really think Francis has got it more together than your average 87 year old. He's doing better than
more than Biden.
That was just going to say better than Biden. Than a president. So Benedict was a transitional pope. I think it means, but strangely, I almost feel like Francis is more of a continuity of JP2 than he was to Benedict.
Yeah.
Like Benedict almost seemed like a step in the more traditional direction. Like Benedict chose the name Benedict because he was almost like, all right, we're done with the council. Right. Like he wanted to move on from the council. He wanted to say, OK, the mayhem of the, you had Pope John the 23rd starts it. Pope Paul the 6th finishes it. Then John Paul the 1st gets a month in office and nothing happens. And John Paul II has a 27-year pontificate where he tries to implement this council. And Benedict comes. And I remember Benedict, even before John Paul died, he started saying, yeah, I don't think we should have a John Paul III. We need something new. Like, so he comes in and he's like, okay, I'm going to go with the name Benedict. And we're going to try to do like a reform of the reform type thing. He emphasizes the hermeneutic of continuity. He lifts the excommunications on the SSPX. He gives us Summorum Pontificum, like all these things in a different direction than John Paul II was going. And then Francis seems like it's like, no, do a U-turn and go back the way. Because it did seem like there was a progression with John Paul II, not morally. Morally, he did stand his ground on most things, but liturgically for sure. And with the ecumenical dialogue stuff for sure.
Yeah. And I think I'd go further back. I'd say he's more of a person of Paul VI than anybody, like of all the last popes, just because Paul VI was really, really... he was more of a fiery revolutionary than I think anything else. And I think that is somewhat Pope Francis's MO, but more so in the area of morals. So I wrote an article that, Tim, you need to put on 1 Peter 5 one day. It basically goes into the history of like where Pope Francis learned moral theology, because all of the controversial stuff, aside from the liturgy that he's touched, it's all been in moral matters. Amoris, Fiducia, right? It's all moral stuff. And when you go back and you look, you see that Pope Francis was really influenced by a stream of German thought that was really popular in South America that was, it has various names, but basically the most common name is the discernment method of moral theology, if that sounds familiar. And basically, yeah, before the council, if you were a priest, right, if you were going in to get moral training, right, if you go and read Prümer, right, everyone knows about Prümer's moral manual, etc. If you go and get Prümer, it's basically one of two things. You're either going to learn virtue, right, and how to be a virtuous person, or B, right, in tandem with that, you're going to learn the commandments and you're going to know what a sin is and what is not a sin. This third method, though, arose in the 40s and 50s, and it was basically a method that said, okay, there are these like objective truths of right and wrong, but really there's a ton of gray area out there, and the pastor and you need to discern with the Holy Spirit to see what is really could be a sin maybe for you and what is a sin when it's not a sin for you, etc. And of course, while this sounds very lovey-dovey, etc., the major issue that it runs in is it turns everything into a gray area, if not permissible, right? And so this is really the background that Pope Francis is steeped in. And I think that his main motive is, whereas Paul VI was interested in like the structure of the church, let me take off the papal robes, let me put on a bishop's garb, etc., let me de-emphasize the ceremonies, the mass down, I think Pope Francis is more of like, okay, let's talk about the moral stuff. Let's get away from all these textbooks and this rigid church of closed walls, and let's open up the windows like the council wanted, and let's be with the people.
Did you see the Megyn Kelly Barron interview?
Mm-hmm.
You got no. Okay, so Megyn Kelly opens up and spills the beans on her annulment with Barron, right? So she comes out.
Her annulment like, with her husband. Her
first
talking with Barron.
She's talking. Yeah, I mean, isn't that obvious?
I just wanted to make sure.
They make it sound like she was married to Barron. So
we knew what she meant.
All right. Here's what happens. She explains she was married 16 years ago in a marriage, and she's been married to a new husband for 16 years, and something in her made her want to return to the faith. She's friends with her first husband. They both decided, hey, let's go about the annulment process. She's finding it very difficult, and the church is so rigid and very, you know, she's finding all these hard things about, you know, why these men are standing in the way and I'm not allowed to receive communion and all this stuff. And these are the situations that Francis tackles with Fiducia. So not Fiducia, this is Amoris, right? So This would be a situation where Megan should be able to go to her priest, and her priest can go, okay, well, without the annulment, you know, your heart's in the right place, you can go. What people saying Barron blew it, but I actually was pretty happy with Barron for saying, look, the reason why you think there's all these roadblocks is because the church holds such a high regard for marriage, right? But in reality, somebody needs to sit down and talk with Megyn Kelly and say, Megyn, if your first marriage was a marriage, like it's a marriage. Mm-hmm. Like you can't just make God who you want him to be. Mm-hmm. If that first marriage was like, it's almost like we're afraid to have these conversations with people where, look, if marriage is not, I mean, the way I explain it to my children and to my loved ones, especially like my sister who went through a divorce, she tried to tell me that, she didn't think her marriage was valid. And I'm like, look, what you're saying is you think your children are bastards, right? That's what you're saying. You're saying your marriage is never valid. Your children are in, they're illegitimate. Like, you have to think about the logical conclusion of where you're going with this. You have to really think about if the Eucharist gets consecrated and that host becomes the body of Christ, you cannot unconsecrate it. And marriage is no different than that. If it's a sacrament, and once that union comes together, you can't undo that union. So she's going through this annulment process. The thing is, she'll get the annulment. She just has to be patient. Mm-hmm. The church hands them out to everybody now. She just doesn't want to wait.
90% of them get approved or something like that?
Almost all of them. Crazy so number, it's just a matter of somebody sitting down and actually catechizing her to understand why marriage is what it is, and explain to her that it's the symbol of God, like the reason Christ calls the church the bride, and all like somebody needs to really sit down and catechize her.
Yeah, do you think
that's the other
like
thing?
Like pride, 100%. Like pride in her. But then I mean, it's kind of obvious that it's pride in her because she falls into what I call like sacramental entitlement, right? These are the people who demand communion on the hand, no matter what. They demand that you should always be able to go up and receive, even if they've never been to confession, etc.
They see it as a rite instead of a gift from God.
Exactly. It's sacramental entitlement. That's just what it is. But I'm wondering, in the context of like the priests and the bishops who kind of downplay all of this, right? Instead of just like shaking her and saying, you know, hey, Megan, like the Eucharist is real, marriage is real, etc.
I'm your soul is in danger. Do not play with
it's
this.
Immortal
like there are for this exactly. goes to the Mike Lewis conversation, right?
Speaking
like,
of
Mike, all right, he wants to. All right, we'll do it on YouTube, definitely, because I did, Mike. I think that there's a fundamental difference in the way we see things, and I think it's not just we're trads, because even before I was a trad, I would have felt the same way.
You think the guy that calls me an anti-Semite views things a little differently from us?
I think it has something to do with temperament, maybe, and there's a few things going on, but it comes down to what Megyn Kelly's dealing with here. It's an overemphasis on the mercy of it. These people think they're entitled to get into confession with a few minutes no matter how many people are there. That's a joke to me, because I grabbed the priest and I said, get back in there.
So I was just going to say that I think that like these priests basically, and many times, like you think, okay, like are they ashamed of the gospel of Christ because they're not actually warning people about the reality of sin? But I wonder if I think that's definitely part of it. But I think a lot of it is also just pride in the fact that they just think that they know better than the entire moral theology history of the church.
It might be, or it might just be horrible catechesis. The influence of Protestantism on everything, right? So Megyn Kelly goes to an Episcopalian church because she can't get what she wants. So she's just like, I'm going to go to an Episcopalian church and I'm going to go. And she goes there. She goes there and hears a woman priest at the Episcopalian church give a homily on trans issues. And she's like, oh,
the state of American, quote, conservative journalism.
But that's the point, right? Like, okay, you want it your way. You're going to go to this Episcopalian church because you need to. You're going to go somewhere that'll give you the sacraments, but you're going to find a false version of Christianity there. Like, Christianity is difficult. It just is. It's not easy. There are times where I sit in the pew and I don't get up to receive. There's a lot of times where I have family members that don't get up to receive. And it's not because...
My mom was away from communion for 20 years because she couldn't bring herself to confession. But she knew not to go up to communion.
So that's actually an interesting thing, because even when I was away from the sacraments... because you know, when I was younger, I went and did some wild things. The couple of times I would go to mass, I would never get up and receive, because my mother catechized me well enough to know if you're in a state of mortal sin or you haven't been to church, you do not get up and receive. Like, I always understood that. It was, you know, I had that much instilled in me. All right. So you want to do the Mike Lewis article? Let's do the Mike Lewis article. I want to try to understand it from his point of view, and I'm going to try to give my point of view without it just being, these people are idiots kind of thing. Like, I
don't think you sent that to me.
It's in the tweet, the Josh Charles tweet.
Ah.
Click the Josh Charles tweet and follow the thread, and you'll find Mike Lewis's article.
I'm blocked.
Oh, okay. I'll send this to you. Hang on. I'm blocked.
Exposed.
Oh, Mike.
Which is funny, because I'm blocked by him, but yet he still somehow got a screenshot of me to post on his
page. Everybody has their alt accounts. I mean, I hear you're running a Michael Lofton alt account or something.
Uh-huh, sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, I have it here. I sent it to the WhatsApp. All right. Are you a hopeful Catholic or a prophet of doom? The furious response by the Pope's critics after he said in January that he hopes hell is empty might offer some clues. Regardless of the denomination or sect, insisting on massa damnata, which is, you know, the damnation of everybody, seems to be a sign of a pessimistic rigorism that sadly infects many religiously observant people and communities. Even though the Catholic church allows us to hope for the salvation of others, including non-Catholics, unbaptized infants, or those who die by suicide, even permits us to hope that hell is empty. This hope is condemned by traditionalists and other rigorists as dangerous or even heretical. These prophets of doom apparently think that a constant and acute fear of eternal damnation is necessary for living a life of virtue and good morals, and that the church would be best served by instilling this fear in its members. So Mike had called this spiritual. Let me see. He called it. Where is it? I want to find exactly what he said.
I love how he's using the term prophets of doom from John the 23rd.
You know, he's the first pope. He's the first pope.
So if we're being compared to the Fatima children, I guess I can't be mad at that, right?
I'm going to let Anthony pull up what he wants to pull up, but whenever... I'm about to go off because there's so many theological problems in here that I can correct.
Good. This is perfect. Okay, so he said, we don't know who is going to hell. We obviously shouldn't take salvation for granted, but we also shouldn't spiritually blackmail people in order to coerce them into a professing a faith that they really don't believe or want to follow. Okay, Mike, there's so much wrong in that statement there.
Christ spiritually blackmailed everyone, guys.
It's not... All right, but don't even be condescending about it. Let's try to explain this in a way because it's not about spiritual blackmail. This is it's a matter of whether something is true or not.
Exactly.
And if Christ is going through the Gospels and telling us about gnashing of teeth and talking about Gehenna over and over and over, for us to change that to sound more easy for people, like I remember saying to somebody one time, would you rather believe a comforting lie because it makes you feel better, or would you rather know the truth? Because if something is a lie, it has absolutely nothing salvific about it. It's you, like, I know the truths are hard to handle at times, but there's also a level of Like Joshua Charles says here, he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. As many of the church's greatest saints have observed, the spiritual life often begins in fear and ends in love as we grow in virtue. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, ends in perfect love, casts out all fear. But if such necessary fear is dismissed, then true love is no longer possible. So I said, also softening the teachings of the church has been catastrophic. The good news is only good if you know what the good news is saving you from. Like, you need to know the bad news in order for the good news to mean anything. So what we've done in our culture is tell people everybody goes to heaven. And I see it all around me. People are constantly looking at, like, I have a Catholic friend. He's from Honduras. I work with the guy, and I was talking about what I'm giving up for Lent. And he goes, yeah, but it's not about what you give up for Lent. Like, you look around you, you think God's just going to send everybody to hell. Like, this is the mentality people have. It's like, They see everybody else doing things and nobody is telling them, no, if you continue on this path, you are going to end up in hell. The gods you chase in this life, you will chase for all eternity. If you want nothing to do with God now, what makes you think you'll want anything to do with him in the next life? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Nick. I know you got a lot to say.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make this as brief as possible because I hate
hogging time. No, don't be brief. I love when you.
I don't want to say this in a mean way, but I'm going to end this man's whole career because there's so many theological problems in this right here.
Well, you got to understand, the people that read it don't care about the theology.
So I'm going to go full scholastic mode real quick. Okay, so number one, just look this main paragraph right here in the middle. There's so many errors. Starting off number one in the first phrase, even though the Catholic Church allows us to hope for the salvation of others. Okay, one of the condemned statements by Pius IX's Syllabus of Errors is that there is great hope of salvation for those who are outside of the Catholic religion. And right, that statement, right, the Syllabus of Errors, which is in conjunction with the document Quanta Cura by Pius IX, right? It's on his document on the current errors, on liberalism, etc. That is an infallible document, and that is the consensus of all of the manuals, which the manuals are part of the broader ordinary universal magisterium of the church. Number two, he says, including non-Catholics, okay, we've already addressed that, unbaptized infants, without opening up a massive can of worms, both The Second Council of Lyons and Florence are explicitly clear. And these are de fide dogma, right? This is the deposit of faith. That number one, right? All those who die with original sin only, right? Descend down into hell, but their punishments are different, right? So we do know dogmatically, number one, baptism is required for salvation in whichever mode it takes place, but that those who die even with original sin only go down into hell, but that hell, if you will, we don't know what it is. We just know that the punishments are different. So this statement right here, where he's saying the church allows us, this comes from ambiguous statements from post-conciliar popes that aren't taking the deposit of faith. Yeah, exactly. They're not taking these things into, I would say.
Nick, can I just jump in for one thing real quick? So, mm-hmm. Rick, nobody is saying God sends you to hell. You choose hell, right? So, I think
that's what that person's saying.
Well, he also says hell is in the imagination. But
never mind, I'm wrong.
Okay, so look, if you, whatever fleeting pleasures you're chasing in your life that aren't God, right? Like, you have men who are addicted to lust. And like, when mm-hmm. you really get into what Dante's talking about, you know, the man who can't actually make a decision on whether God exists or not, like the man who can't make up his mind, he'll chase a white flag for all of eternity, a flag that stands for nothing, and he'll just chase it for all eternity. Whatever your fleeting pleasure is, that is a God, right? So all these gods in the pagan world were associated with temptations and spirits of temptation, right? So you have spirits of lust, you have spirits of envy, greed, all these things. Whatever your thing is that you're chasing in this life, you will chase that for all of eternity. It's not that God is going to punish you. I really see hell as, if you see God as a consuming or a burning fire, right? Your soul can only be before that fire if it's pure. Right. So that's why we have to go through purgatory, where God turns the heat down a little bit and he allows that sins that you're attached to burn off before you're fully in his presence. Hell is where God turns the heat way down because you're not in his presence, because to be in God's presence and not in a state of grace would be torture. It would take away your free will. Also, it would just be absolute torture to be in his presence when you don't want to be.
Yeah.
The Fatima prayer here. Mike is speaking of the souls in purgatory.
What I would even say is that, like, this prayer, right, goes to my next point, which is that the hope that hell is empty. Here's my main criticism of that. It's not that traditionalists are like, we just gleefully want people to be in hell. That is a massive straw man that's just, I think, intellectually dishonest.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. Rather, the dogma of hell, that hell exists, and that those who die with original sin and mortal sin on their conscience go to it. Those are both dogmas. They both become practically useless. Why are they dogmas? They don't even have a practical application if this theory is correct. And then my final critique on this paragraph would be this phraseology of rigorous. This is, like, I think in Catholic terms, something analogous to racism or sexism. Rigorism in moral theology is basically the belief system, and it's condemned by the church totally, that if you have several moral opinions, right, you're supposed to pick the harder one, even if there is, like, little to no support, you know, if you will, from the saints or from the theologians around this argument for moral matters. That's not what traditionalists are arguing for. Traditionalists are looking and saying, hey, look, our Lord himself says this in Scripture, that few enter into the kingdom of God. And the vast majority of saints and doctors say the exact same opinion. So this is the majority opinion. And because it's in the Scripture and because it's backed up by these dogmas of various ecumenical councils, you can't get away from the objective truth. Doesn't mean that we don't want people to be in heaven, but we have to go back to what has the church objectively taught in her magisterium. And that's why I think that this paragraph is loaded with lots of errors.
Not just loaded with errors, you're taking away meaning. Like, if you like, Mike, so if you're really curious why Jordan Peterson is such a phenomenon right now, it's because for 60 years, people have been telling everybody, no, everything's easy. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. Jordan Peterson comes out and he's like, clean your room. Like, do something challenging. Go pick up something heavy. Whatever the hardest thing you can think to do is, go do it. Young men need to hear things like this. Young men need to hear, if you do not get your act together, you will burn in hell.
Exactly.
Now, there may be temperaments that have a hard time hearing things like that, but not everybody has the same temperament as you, Mike. Like, there are young men, especially, like, my biggest criticism of the church right now is not fiducia supplicans. It's not any of the documents that came out of the Vatican. It's the abandonment of young men. It is that we are placating to women over and over. Women priests, women deacons. We got to put women in the sanctuary. Women, 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 women. Women run the whole parish. I called the church. I went on Holy Week. I wanted to go to confession. I call the parish. Marianne in the parish answers the phone. I'm like, Marianne, listen, I need to get to confession before Easter. Is there any way you could ask the priest if I could come in and see him? Oh, there's no way he can see you. He's just got so much going on. I'm like, Marianne, can you please just go and ask the priest? Okay, hold on 1 second. She comes back. Yeah, he said he could see you. What time is available for you? Like, this is the thing that we have guarding our priests. These are the women that are running everything. If we keep ignoring young men, there is going to be a major problem. So there's another article that I was talking to Nick about, that there's been like this resurgence of baptisms in the church this year. Like, there was a high number of, Rob, the article's in there.
Yeah.
And this is all connected. And there's, you could see it in the trad communities and you can see it in the Orthodox communities. There's a lot of young men coming into the church right now. I just watched a conversation between Peugeot and the guy who had that unbelievable series, who was having conversations with guys like Tom Holland and stuff like that. But there, you're seeing, this is perfect to go into Dawkins too, because you had the new atheist telling everybody God's not real, God's not real, God's not real. And then all of a sudden everybody decided to chuck God out. And then they come around and they find out that the Enlightenment and rationalism just doesn't do it for them. It's meaningless. So what you have is a bunch of young men finding some of these more ancient practices, saying, hey, this worked for our ancestors. Maybe this will work for us. It's lighting a fire in them. And they're coming in with a new perspective on things. I hate to say it, Mike, but you have a very hippie mentality when it comes to the church. And that's, there's, it's not a schismatic thing. It's not two separate churches. It's just different ways that people are seeing like ways to find meaning, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the thing is when you see the new atheists, they weren't even just saying, you know, don't believe in God. They were saying, my religion bad. Religion's bad. It causes all these wars, all these poverty problems, all these corrupt priests, all these corrupt teachers, pastors, etc. They were basically blasting people in the Western world 24/7 about the evils of religion. And then as people embrace secularism and the Enlightenment ideal, they practice it for, you know, a decade and a half. And then you see a ton of Zoomers online saying, wow, like, our dating lives are completely messed up. Our family lives are completely messed up. And particularly from young men, it's like the world hates us. Everybody's blaming us for everything. The only people that are being basically put on the pedestal as gods and goddesses are people who engage in homosexual activity, right? There's nothing for us. But then what happens? Right. Oh, well, there's a massive amount of migration from certain Middle Eastern countries into Western nations. And then all of a sudden, the new thing, which is starting to take over as the culture, is a 7th century Bedouin faith called Islam, where, you know, it demands, if you will, a certain amount of rigorism. Right. But then it completely alters the entire culture as well. And so now the atheists are, you know, flipping out.
But they're not going to be able
to deal with the nice Christians.
But it is this. All right, so let's play the Dawkins clip, because this is perfect segue into the Dawkins clip. Let's play the Dawkins clip.
You wanted the other article.
Go to the Dawkins clip. This is just too good, because this is all connected. I really see the whole thing with Mike Lewis's point leading into the Dawkins clip and just the meaning crisis. Everything Jordan Peterson's been talking about. I even have a Jordan Peterson clip that I want to send you, where he's talking about existing on the margins. He won't become Catholic because he's existing on the margins. That I think that's an important conversation. I'm not saying you're actually a hippie, Mike. I know you're my age. Me and you are the same age. What I'm saying is it's a very soft way to look at it. This might be a good conversation for me and you to have on screen, like, because we come from two totally different worldviews, and it might just be a good conversation for us to maybe try to see each other's perspective. Because I know you have a way of othering people who don't see things the way you do. I saw you went on a rant recently where you just like, I cut trads off totally. I can't even have conversations with these people. They're totally different than me. And that, I think, is the scariest thing in the world. Like, we cannot start viewing people as other. There needs to be these conversations where we can have, you know, we figure out where the other person's coming from. So, all right, let's play this Dawkins clip real quick.
Well, I must say, I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we, certainly if we substituted any alternative religion, that would be truly dreadful.
Well, which brings me to my supplementary point. Which
pause
is
it real quick. We'll get into the Islam thing next. Like he does not see the absurdity of what he's saying.
Exactly. He's philosophically insane.
It's just totally preposterous. This guy spent his life convincing people that there is no God without even a thought that every civilization in human history had gods, right? So aside from Islam coming about, like, there's something in humanity that, I mean, we as Christians would say God left a God-sized hole. As Augustine says, right? He is made like a God-shaped hole in our hearts so that our hearts are restless until we rest in him. But even not from a Christian perspective, you could see all around us, the atheist movement gave rise to this rainbow thing that's coming up, right? This trans movement that's coming up, that all because there's so much religious symbolism in all those things. What do you think they mean when they're talking about what was some of the things they were saying? They're like trans is divine, things like that. Like, this is all religious symbolism coming back in. If you look back to the ancient world, every single culture had religion. When you tell people, oh, I think it's a good thing that people aren't practicing Christianity anymore, but I don't want to get rid of our cathedrals. If people don't care about something, they're going to get rid of it and something else will replace it. And the fact that he's not even hearing the words out of his own mouth and not seeing how preposterous it is what he's saying, it baffles me.
It baffles me too. There's like three things that come to mind. One, the fact that you're right. So like scholastics call this God-sized hole and how every culture has been religious. They call this in a certain broad sense, natural theology. And it's actually great proof for the existence of God, for the fact that it's not coincidental that every single culture has been religious. That just does not make sense. The fact that cultures separated by thousands of miles all happen to be religious. So clearly that's at least a proof for the existence of God. Number two, he likes the beautiful stuff, the cathedrals, the smells and bells, if you will, right? He finds them beautiful, but yet he can't tell you where beauty comes from or how it's objectively beautiful. Right. And so that again goes to show you his philosophical inconsistency, right? He is just falling back on his own probably enlightenment rationalism. And third and final, he likes the Christian cathedrals and, if you will, Christians more than Muslims, because the Christians nowadays are so effeminate. They're so weak and they're so lukewarm. They will be spewed out of the mouth of the Lord. And he knows that he can get away, right, with saying his type of stuff and their type of nation, as opposed to, as he's saying, Ramadan's being celebrated now. And if it becomes majority in the UK, maybe I need to move over to the United States or to Canada or something and escape. So
there's a video out of the UK of a guy, a regular English guy. He's a janitor and he goes to eat his lunch and a Muslim guy comes up to him and he goes, slams his fist down on the table. You don't eat during Ramadan. And the guy just takes his lunch, folds it up and goes and walks away. It's like, you're in your own country. You're not Muslim. And you're being told you have to observe Ramadan. These people, this is the fruits of your labor. I'm sorry that you have buyer's remorse, but I have no sympathy for Richard Dawkins. I have sympathy for the Gavin Ashendens and the, you know, the Mark Sitzios and the Calvin Robinsons. Those guys are doing what they can to salvage their culture. But the people that are lukewarm, the Christians that are lukewarm and the atheists who push this on everybody, like, you are the most despicable people. You threw out your birthright. You threw out your heritage. You threw out your culture, and you gave it over to them. You gave it over to this new thing that's popping up, and this new thing is going to be worse than Islam. I'm telling. Look, I sent Rob a thing that we can't even read on here. There's a Reddit thread where the people in that rainbow ideology are talking about becoming martyrs or going on mass sprees, like there was down in Nashville. The Nashville spree. This is what's coming, and people don't recognize it. Religion is coming back. Now, is it going to be Christianity or is it going to be something else? I think that the church has to die in order for, because the state that, I mean, just think about the things we're talking about tonight. The church is in such a messy state. I think that there will be some versions of Christianity that last through whatever is coming next. But I think the thing Mike Lewis is talking about, I don't think it lasts. It can't. It doesn't challenge people enough to actually do anything to live out a life of Christian virtue. It's not forming saints. Telling when people that everybody goes to heaven is not making saints.
Exactly. When there's future, I'm trying to speak at least simply here on YouTube, but when there's future massacres from the rainbow community that are inflicted upon Christians in cathedrals because they're trying to be these martyrs, right? Do you really think that we need to be promoting things like fiducia at that point, whenever stuff like this goes on? It's clearly not going to be a thing in 50 to 60 years. I have full confidence that the church will be taken over by a bunch of conservative young men. Let's pray to God. But yeah, no, this is buyer's remorse that they're having over in the UK and in Canada and places like this. And that's the point. If you do this, the chickens are going to come home to roost. And this time they're coming home from the land of the Saracens, and it's not going to be pretty.
But not just that, even the anti-Semitism stuff popping up, like Ben Shapiro is doing more harm to his people than he can imagine. Because he is making people, but he's just doing harm to his cause because he's coming down so heavy handed with everything that he's saying that it's making people go, what is this, man? Like, you're just making people wake up.
The fact that an aid convoy was hit yesterday and someone reported on that, he called it blood libel.
Yeah, it's
everything's blood libel now.
It's just crazy. Absurd.
I don't know if you guys watch the Patrick Bet David show. I'll tune in every once in a while.
Yeah, they're calling it the Israeli Wire now, right?
Yeah, they call it that. And it's I forget what the comedian was that they were like, they interviewed him a while back, but then they were watching a clip that he put out. And basically they were showing this clip of Ben Shapiro. He has all these commercials, right, where he's just like, you know, people, regardless of political party, they're fearful of losing their job because of their political views, right? We're not going to have this at the Daily Wire, right? Facts don't care about your feelings, freedom of speech, all of that. But then explicitly now, it is clear that Candace was fired because of her political beliefs.
Yeah.
Right, which aren't even that edgy for Christians.
No, they weren't. And she was very subtle about everything. And all right, listen, we're at an hour and three. We have 387 people on YouTube watching live right now. I think that might even be a record on YouTube. Not like we have 793 total watching, but there's almost 400 of you watching on YouTube. Everybody, please hit like. We are trying to grow this show. I do think this is a very interesting show. I'm going to try and get Mike Lewis on, and I want to have like a real conversation with him and try to see from his point of view. I think him and I have good temperaments. Well, I think I have a good temperament to talk to Mike. I've seen
a live Twitter thread.
Well, I think it'll be an interesting conversation. I think Mike knows I have enough goodwill that I would never sandbag him or anything like that. It might be an interesting conversation. We're going to go over to Locals and we're going to discuss some things we can't discuss over here. If you guys are not subscribed to our Locals, that's where we have a lot more fun than we do here. We're going to discuss the Trad Recovery Conference, their commercial that they came out with. And we're going to discuss some inside baseball of why Nick Cavazos is enemy number one at Meaning of Catholic right now.
Apparently.
Mike, we'll talk later. I'm glad that you are. I'm glad that you see our show as reasonable enough for you to tune in on occasion, because I know you do pop in the chat on once in a while. So we will, Don said, Mike pretending he's not a locals member. Oh, man. Let me tell you something. I saw Brian Holdsworth pop the comment up on one of our videos today. I'm always surprised at the people that do watch our show. Because every once in a while, look, we've had the people that everybody watches pop in and check our show out sometime. I think this was a very good show. It's going to be hard to cut up into clips because it was just kind of one continuous stream of consciousness. It's going to be difficult to clip this one.
You are a master of streams of consciousness.
Yes.
Well, consciousness is maybe a stretch, but...
I'm sorry, Nick. I hogged up a lot of your time. I know you were itching. You look like you were chopping at the bit. You wanted to jump in.
After last night, he's used to it.
Oh, no, man. It's all good.
All right, so we're going to go over to locals, guys. We'll see you over there. Rob, I want you to kill the Twitter feed too, man. These people, they enough giving our stuff away for free. You guys want to see us? You want to see the real show? You got to pay.
I mean, we have 400 people watching on Twitter. So if you're watching on Twitter, go to locals.
Go to locals. Come on, guys. We're the best freaking show on. Come on.
It is worth it because I have not seen this supposed trad recovery ad, and I feel like my night's going to be ruined. And so we're gonna see what happens.
And you can watch for free on locals. You don't have to pay to watch. You just can't comment. But please pay us too.
We'll do that. But all right, so we'll do that. We won't make the whole thing behind a paywall. So if you guys at least join our locals, we'll let you watch for free.
We should make plush dolls of us so people can co-sleep with us.
Oh no. Why? That's a thought.
All right, guys. We're heading over there. We'll see you guys on the other side.
Okay, we should be all set.
That was a good show, man, because I looked up and I was like, I was thinking maybe we're at 40 minutes, 35 minutes, and I'm like, we're in an hour and three? What the heck? Like, when time flies like that, that means, like, it is going to be hard to chop that show up, though, because usually it's like, okay, let's bring the next story up. That was just like, well, this one feeds into this one. This one feeds into this one, and it just kind of went into a continuous stream, but... should we get into this trad recovery commercial? I sent it to you, right?
Yeah. Give me a second.
I feel like I'm going to be so mad.
No, listen to me.
I think you're just going to feel a little pity is what you're going to feel.
Well, the irony is that I got a phone call from Jeremiah when I made my commercial. And he was like, dude, that was uncharitable. And like, I was like, oh,
not nuanced.
I said, dude, the way they marketed this thing, it just was like begging to be made fun of. I said, I had no idea you were a part of it. I really wouldn't, if I knew Jeremiah was involved, I wouldn't have done it. I saw Michael Lofton's face on there and I saw Trad Recovery and they marketed it like it was this, like, are you addicted to AA
meeting?
Yeah, it was like an AA meeting. So I'm like, I have to do something with this. It's just with the history of me and Lofton, I'm like, I have to do something with
this. We should come up with a 12-step program.
So now they do basically the same thing I did, except it's long and not funny. It's just not funny. I mean, I'll laugh if something's funny.
Think of how much time they put into it. You put what, 10 minutes?
It's a minute and two minute clip. I did three takes. It took me about 10 minutes to make. They did like real production on this, and I didn't even crack a smile. And it like blatantly said satire all over because they want to make sure that everybody in the trad recovery knows that we're on your side. And I saw Haley commented saying, this is hilarious because it's coming from them. Not
Haley thinks hilarious. Guitar music's good at mass. So,
all right, let's play this thing. You guys are gonna cringe.
I mean, just this, it should stop right here. I mean, come on.
Like, you ruined the joke. Yeah. You just ruined the joke. I'm just telling you guys.
Okay, here we go. 3.5 minutes.
Dude, it's worth every second. I promise. You're gonna love every minute of cringe here.
The first luminous mystery is the baptism of our Lord. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
They were playing the luminous mysteries too. All right, that's kind of funny. But like, why multiple veils?
You guys know that this is not like put on by the Trad Conference, though, right?
Yeah, it is. It's the Trad Recovery Conference. We need this.
I don't think it was actually.
It's not. No, it's made by that college, which is a trad college for young people up in Maryland, the Collegium.
Oh, yeah, so no, I'm making fun of the wrong.
It's that I put this in the chat the other day. This is the you did. Trolling the Trad Recovery Conference, and they're
okay. Are you struggling? All right, I'm sorry, guys. Actually, you guys tried. You swung and missed. I'm sorry, guys. I thought this was their thing.
I actually sent this to Kennedy the other day, Kennedy Hall, and I was like, you got kind of a shout out in the middle of this video.
Anthony, yeah, why kind don't you of. Pay attention to your own chat?
I just blew it. All right, so let's take this out. I don't want to trash them. If they're trash, I don't want to trash them.
The luminous, blatantly partisan thing you've ever done. Oh, listen. Wait, no, nope, they're on our side.
Listen, I am not going to trash one of our own. I won't do it. If you guys want some help with your comedy writing,
yeah, I will say comedically, it's like gives some chuckles, but it's not, I would say yours is infinitely more funny. That random dude who just gave you like a voicemail was the best of all.
We have a ton of voice. I don't have them ready.
No, and the thing is,
Hold on. I think we do.
I want to play that on YouTube.
What? You want to play that on YouTube?
Yeah, because Frank's a good dude. I want to make sure
we can do a clip.
All right, so let's play his voicemail. We'll throw it up as a clip.
Okay. So the last one was the last one Trump?
The Trump one is Nick's friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just play Frank's. Let's go to Frank's.
Do we listen to the Tuco one?
I think so.
I don't think I have them ready.
All right. So we'll plan those for the next show. All right. So Nick, with Meaning of Catholic, Tim left a video message for all of us. And I didn't know if it was about you or me because of the whole thing started. He explained the whole Trad Recovery Conference thing. And he goes, you know, there's some infighting at Meaning of Catholic, and two people came to me and they were upset with one of the other guys. And I just told him straight out, if you're upset with them, go and talk to them. And I thought it was me because I got the phone call from Jeremiah Bannister.
Well, you also think it's always you, so.
Well, yeah, I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Everything's about me, I mean. But no, because I got the call from Jeremiah, I thought it was about me. But, Nick, you were saying it was about you. So what video was it that they took issue with?
More or less, it's my long series, The Problem with the Novus Ordo Mass. I don't even know who it was, right?
Yeah.
At the Meaning of Catholic, but there was apparently two people at the Meaning of Catholic who were not happy about it. They thought it went too far. And Tim, he's just a really solid dude. He defended me. He said, no, these don't go against our, you know, basic, if you will, doctrinal statement. And if you have an issue with this, you know, take it up with the author yourself. What I find interesting though is, again, I think two things. Number one, I think just on a natural level, it's a good thing to just approach a person that you have issues with directly, unless it makes sense. Absolutely. To not. So like, if for instance, someone's kid is doing some bad stuff and they're younger, right? Okay. Yeah. Go talk to the parent or something like that. Right. But if it's a fellow adult, right, fellow content creator, fellow, you know, creator on the same platform, right, go and speak to them. Yeah. And it's no issue. I'm totally open.
And if it's a man, especially, like if you're a man, be a man. Just
Exactly.
Like, don't go and tattle to the boss.
Exactly. But then also I would say, like, what's sad to me is that I've had a lot of people, most like 99% of the people love this series because it's very scholarly, it's very in-depth. But the people who have issue with it, no one addresses the points. I go meticulously line by line. I give like 50 solid Thomistic style arguments in every single episode, and I never get rebuttals to any of them. It's always just, you know, you're doing bad. And I'm saying that's not an argument. This is just drama being stirred up for no reason. If you don't like it, then just turn off the episode. Don't watch.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think that goes to the same thing that we were dealing with Mike Lewis, right? Like, dealing with people who that's mean. Don't be mean. But there's a way that can be mean, right? If
sure, yeah.
Like I saw that Miss B just converted, right? And you have tons of people, like, she's just a new convert. The girl doesn't know what the hell's going on. And she's got people coming in and, like, hammering her down and, like, telling her, you don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. It's like, that's not the way to approach it. The way to approach it is to show her this video that you made, and it's the scholarly approach. But there really is a major issue, and it goes back to the entire theme of that last episode, which is with the same thing with the hell is not empty thing. Like, we have to stop being so afraid to just teach the truths of the faith. I mean, they're difficult at times. I mean, I've had arguments with family members over some stuff, but it patches up in the end. And then later on, I've had, like, even my sister, man, my sister, when she was going through her divorce, some of the things I said to her were very harsh. I was just like, she wanted me as her brother to just take her side no matter what. And I was just like, I cannot do that. And now later on, now that she went through with her divorce, her kids go to the father on the weekends. And now she had a reversion. She's going to mass and she can't take her kids to mass. And it's like, these are the things I was laying out to you. So, you know, withholding the truth from somebody does no good to them. And that was my main issue with what Mike was saying, because he's like, what, you guys are just prophets of doom and you're doing, what was he called? Spiritual blackmail. Like, the idea of seeing it that way is absurd to me.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I find really typical is that, unfortunately, I put this out in your guys' Telegram chat today. I said, what astounds me about the Catholic religion is that we have the most rigorous intellectual arguments, right, proving the faith more than any other religion does on planet Earth. But yet we have the most, if you will, insane people also who don't tap into that. And so rather than giving academic arguments, yay or nay, on any of these issues, it's just turned into one massive dumpster fire of emotions, where it's ridiculous. So as an example, you know, this whole Trad Recovery Conference, it starts with that lady, right? You know, Miss Happy Catholic, who in, you know, her channel paints traditionalists as cults, right? As a cult.
I've never seen any of her stuff. So what is the origin of this whole conference?
Yeah. So the origin of the conference is that this girl was starting to do a lot of interviews and her channel was picking up, right? And these interviews were mainly from sedevacantists and then former parishioners of SSPX chapels. She would always do these hyperbolic off the wall interview styles where it would be like, you know, the underground tunnel away from the cult of the SSPX. It'd be stuff like that, like crazy off the wall stuff. And then she created, I remember getting this from a friend, maybe like 7-8 months ago, she created Trad Recovery. And then she got in contact with this nun who's one of the main speakers. It's up on like the flyer, who's like a former CMRI, which is a sedevacantist congregation. They decided, like, let's throw on this conference. And then they got all the big, you know, if you will, people like Michael Lofton, et cetera, involved. Now, what makes me so sad about this conference isn't just the fact that, like, it furthers, you know, inflames the division, if you will. But the fact that, as the guy on, he has that show, I Miss Christendom, pointed out in his response to Miss Happy Catholic yesterday, he said, you, in your story, right, in your episodes and in your testimonials, paint all the trads, including the FSSP and diocesan TLMs, as people who are falling into schismatic tendencies and cults. So you have all these people who you're saying are falling into cults, but yet none of your speakers are talking about psychological healing, emotional healing, anything like that, right? None of your resources on your page are like 12-step programmed mental health recovery. None of the stuff like that. It's all just anti-trad stuff. So yeah. You're taking people's legitimate bad experiences, which I think traditionalists should actually call out, right, and do mm-hmm. an examination of conscience for. You take those experiences and then you use them to push forward your agenda, your theological agenda, without even addressing the traditionalist arguments in a clear and cohesive fashion. So it's just totally immoral in my mind, if that's the main problem. I'm not saying that every speaker is that way. I'm definitely not saying Jeremiah is doing that or anything like that. I'm just saying that this individual.
So right, Jeremiah, he was at one time a sedevacantist. Yes. So I know he has a lot of issues with trads, right? Like he really mm-hmm. does. But what I've noticed with him is even when you talk to him, his only argument is about how if you don't let the Pope be the final say of the argument, like that's his main thing. It's like the Pope has to be the final arbiter of the argument, and that's that. And whenever I've tried to bring up to him, I'm like, okay, that's fine. But when we see things that are not in line with what we know to be true as Catholics, how do you address that? No, you can't even address it. Like he doesn't even want you to address any of those things. He sees all of that as like crypto sede vacantism. Like
he sees it. It is in some way, and if not with him, but with others, projection, because they themselves cannot address that in their own mind without going down that path,
right? Like, because Jeremiah, when he even flirted with it, he ended up going there. So he thinks everybody. This is my biggest thing, because I see it in every area. Like I saw it with Trent Horn when he was addressing Taylor Marshall with the moon landing stuff. I see it. Everybody thinks their way of seeing the world is the only way to see the world. Like mm-hmm. Trent was sending me, he's like, I have so many people who told me I saved them from Taylor Marshall sending them down this path. And then you'll see, but then you go and look at Taylor's channel, and Taylor's channel is like, if it wasn't for you speaking up, I would have thought I was crazy and I would have left the Catholic faith. Everybody needs to understand that not everybody's going to see the world the way you do. Not everybody's going to receive the faith the way you do. God works differently in every person. And you have to really, you know, you can't think, what I think is true, not what I think is true, because what is truth, but the way I perceive things is the only way for them to be perceived.
Exactly. And I think what it is it's just a ton of intellectual pride that's just running rampant here, there, and everywhere. I have, if you will, the infallible keys, and I'm going myself. And I think what's really sad about particularly, and again, like I care a lot about Jeremiah, but his hermeneutic, I'll just address his hermeneutic or his viewpoint, is like on the one hand, right, you can't question the Pope, right? But is that not, if you will, just the other side of the coin of the sedevacantist position? Both of them agree, yeah, you should just never question the Pope.
Yeah.
One of them just takes the extra step and says, well, these guys have said some bad stuff, therefore they're just not the Pope.
Yeah.
It seems to me then, rationally speaking, if the church, you'll like this, Anthony, because I think you talked about this at the canceled priest conference a bit, but like if the church is the kingdom of God on earth, which it is, and Christ is the king, he's the head, he's right. When he leaves, he gives his possession, right? His possession, his rulership to the vicar, right? The guy in charge, the, you know, if you will, acting mayor. And he says, okay, here's my deposit, right? Here's my leadership, my authority. I'm still in charge, but I'm going off to war, or I'm going off to do etc. You're in charge. Okay. Well, what takes place whenever that guy who's the vicar, the steward or whatever, starts to abuse that authority? Do we either just say, okay, well, we should just never question it, even though all of our faculties of reason are saying he's abusing authority? So that's option one. Two, are we just going to say, well, he's just not the vicar, period? I'm yeah. like, okay, well, I don't know. Like the guy kind of left him with that job, so I don't know if that works. Or can we just say rationally with St. Thomas, hey, look, an unjust law isn't a law. You have the position, but you're just abusing your position. I'm just not going to listen to it because it contradicts kind of what the guy gave you.
Yeah, I almost see everything we're going through right now as fulfilling prophecy. Like I really do think if you go back and you really see everything typologically, you are seeing the fulfillment of prophecy. You're just not going to see and understand it until after it's done. Like it, in the moment, everything seems like it's chaos and it's, you know, that I think that the set of Acanthus, their position is, well, it doesn't make sense to me right now. And I need to make sense. I think they just need to make sense of it. And mm-hmm. I think there are times in salvation history, and if, especially if you go back into the Old Testament, where they're the people of God, they're the chosen people, but it looks like a mess. It's like, all right, yeah, but they're still the chosen people. It's just things are a mess right now. And I think we're just in one of those periods right now. But when you have the glorious resurrection and you look in hindsight, you will see God's hand in every single facet of what we're going through right now. And I think we're in a time where you really do need to cling to what we know to be true by looking to the past at the times where the church wasn't in its craziness. So you have to go and you really do have to cling to those traditions that we know, like St. Paul says, hold to the traditions, whether through word or mouth or written letter. This is what you do in times of chaos, and you just wait for the storm to settle. And when the storm settles, then you can maybe have a better look at the situation. But in the middle of the storm, you don't make a rash decision and jump off the boat.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, you know, one thing I'm curious to hear both of your guys' opinion on this. So you guys know, like, there's that set a position out there which says they try to use the crisis in the church as kind of, they'll use an Old Testament typological analogy of the Jews when they were cast out of the Holy Land for, you know, 70 years right before they came back and built the second temple, right? That's kind of an analogy they'll use. Okay, here's one of my main issues with set of Acanthism, and it kind of links into this theory. The biggest hole in set of Acanthism is the fact that we've had, if you will, 70 years of post-conciliar popes reigning on the
throne. There's one or two popes maybe, but...
Yeah, maybe. But see, here's the thing. Vatican I explicitly teaches as a dogma with attached anathemas that the primacy and the papacy will be in perpetuity until the end of time. And the reason is because Christ has to govern his church, teach, sanctify, and govern till the end of time. Okay, well, yeah, maybe if there's not one pope, okay, two popes, cool, maybe. But 70 years? How does that work with the Vatican 70
years dogma? And it would be what? It would be John the 23rd, Paul the 6th, Pope John the 1st, Paul the 1st, Pope John Paul the 2nd, Benedict, and now Francis. Six anti-popes consecutively.
Exactly. So how does Vatican I make any sense if it literally explicitly says that the papacy will be in perpetuity in full governing force till the end of time? And that's why I'm like, okay, you know, you can try to use this typological argument of the people are kind of cast out and it takes a mystical thing from God to bring back in. And that does seem to be kind of the set A argument is that, you know, we don't know what God will do, but, you know, we kind of just think that Pius the 13th will show up, you know, when God descends down from the heavens and says he's the Pope and then it moves forward.
I just think things are so messed up, humanly speaking, right now that there's no possible human way to fix it. There is possible way for it to be fixed, humanly speaking. There has to be some kind of crazy chastisement that comes and the whole thing collapses and is reborn. Like, it just, the church needs to follow our Lord into his passion and then resurrect. Like, that's just what has to happen. But in the meantime, you're still part of the body of Christ.
Yeah.
So I think.
Go for it.
I was just going to say, I just think it's very important that all of us find a solid parish or a solid chapel to go to. And you have to have somewhere that you know that you will be able to practice the actual Catholic faith and not be given some crazy stuff right now, because it's crazy stuff everywhere. And that's kind of going to be the idea behind these man on the street interviews that I go and do, because I kind of want to get a feel for what people believe in the pews, you know? And I think you're going to see a drastic contrast between your typical Novus Ordo and your typical, you know, trad parish.
1000%. Yeah, no, that was my suggestion too. I think it's like we sometimes in the church, understandably so, but kind of look at it through the lens of how we view the presidency, the office of the presidency, and how he should be the one to like fix all the problems in the United States whenever so much of the issue is a local level. And I think that that is just the thing is that, you know, Catholics, we've been on our laurels, if you will, not taking responsibility in it. So finding a good church, but then I would say also just holding accountable your bishop in a just and charitable sense, in a filial sense, but holding like him accountable and the clergy in the diocese accountable, right? And so this is, I think, where it really takes people like maybe even, you know, influencers like us, some type of, you know, weight to say, hey, like when something is going wrong, like it just does need to be called out, you know, if it's objectively wrong.
Yeah, man, I think there's so few bishops with spines right now. It's a rough one.
They're all sweating bullets. I can't. What do you guys think? This is what I think is funny. Do you guys think when the current Holy Father dies that we're just going to get like a flood, a massive avalanche of videos, essays, bishops like being leaked out,
yeah,
all saying, yeah, man, that guy was wild. Like he was the worst.
I think we'll get the truth about the 2013 conclave.
Mm-hmm.
And the, and the resignation.
See, man, I think what happens after Francis, man? I don't know. I think chaos.
I think full on. I personally don't see a logical, rational way out of some situation that's going to be basically Avignon 2.0 style, where you're going to have two guys who are both claiming to be popes, which I think, like will suck, but in a way, I think it will help in the long run.
You could have two claimants. You could have a very long interregnum,
yeah,
where they can't decide. Or you could get a guy even slightly back towards the Benedict style. And I think even if you got that, even if you got a Benedict the 17th, I don't think you guys realize the ramifications of that. You're getting schism.
You've told us every episode for a year and a half. So yes,
I know. I just think that's what happens. Like you do get that complete rupture. All these people that are so into the revolution when it goes back, like look at how leftists react, man, when they don't get their way. They flip out, they go crazy. I think it's gonna be mayhem.
It'd be very interesting to see Father James Martin lead like a protest or something. Cause I mean, that's the thing. Like you look at, for instance, what Dr. Taylor Marsh was talking about today on his show, he was going through one of those lists. Like it was those voting lists that were saying this many bishops voted for, you know, Ratzinger and Bergoglio, et cetera. And one thing that I thought was very interesting is that, and I mentioned this again in the Telegram chat, I feel like that's my Twitter is just the Telegram chat, but it's like, okay, a lot of the post-trads, particularly Gen Z post-trads, right? A lot of them I love. Deep down, I love them because a lot of them like are Thomists, but then they're really cringe on church politics. A lot of them will try to make Pope Francis to seem like this ultra-Chad-based Thomist Pope, which is very funny to me. I don't even know where what they're smoking with that. But one thing is interesting to me is this reality. When you go back and you look and you see, okay, the liberal groups are coalescing around Bergoglio to become the Pope. And then post that, who does he put inside large positions of power, right? So as an example, Father James Martin, the whole argument that, well, Pope Francis doesn't have the connection to the internet, so therefore he doesn't know what James Martin is about nonsense, because Father James Martin works as the media director for the Vatican. You can find it on their own website. Like he is one of the main, if you will.
He writes him a letter every single year during Pride Month, congratulating him on his ministry.
Exactly. So he works for it. He's explicit about it. The Pope is not an ignorant person. He's a politician, right? You see Cardinal Roach, right? He famously, when Sonorum came out, right, he hated the fact that the Latin Mass was becoming unshackled. And so he regulated the diocesan TLM to literally an airport basement chapel. And he was like, okay, you guys can hang out in the basement.
Yeah.
So I'm following along. But then, of course, you know, his views are well known, but then he becomes in charge of this whole issue when it comes to liturgy, right? Out with Seurat, in with Roach, etc. So it's not that hard to see. So if leftists are in power for long enough, once they lose power, they go insane, just like, you know, post-2016 and hopefully post-2024. And when they go insane in the church, what will be interesting is that I don't think they're going to be chucking statues and, you know, burning cars, although seeing Father James Martin like with the torch burning a car would actually be kind of funny. They're going to be saying, hey, like our church has been taken over by fascists, by these rigorists, by these guys who blackmail people morally. We need to save the true teaching of Christ of love your neighbor as yourself. And this guy over here, you know, in this deadlocked conclave or whatever, he's the Pope, right, etc. That's just what's going to happen.
Wait, okay, so Monday that document comes out. Do you think we should do a show Monday?
That'd be fun, yeah. No, I'd be down to do it.
As long as we don't do one Tuesday.
Yeah, no show Tuesday. If we do one Monday, we do one Monday. But I would love to have Nick on because Nick made some really good predictions on that document, man.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I heard some people say that they're really hoping that it's going to crack down hard on transgenderism. But I'm thinking like it's going to talk about death penalty stuff and like immigration. Yeah. That's I think going to be like it always is.
The first half will be
based
the stuff that people can point to, and then the second half will be all the bad stuff that the trans point to.
Exactly. It's like they give ammunition for a fight every time they release something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like the U.S. playing both sides of a conflict, giving weapons to both.
Exactly. Did you guys see what's it called? Fernandez is like media explanation about the new document, like his media take on it. He said this will not be as hopefully as controversial as Fiducia.
Hopefully, but I think it will.
Yeah. Don wants to know if we really think there's still going to be the internet on Monday night after the eclipse.
No, Don, the question is, do you think that? Because we know the pilgrimage you're on right now. All right, so Monday night we do a show on the document because
should release what, like 5 or 6 a.m. our time usually?
So we'll have all day to go through. I'm sure every other freaking content creators, that's why we have to do it Monday.
Yeah.
We have to do it Monday. And I do think people are starting to like our commentary, especially the three of us. I think people enjoy the... especially when Nick goes off on a tangent. Like, I think people really do enjoy it.
I get
mad. And we have to get the questions down that I'm going to do on the Man on the Street interview. So maybe we'll ask the Telegram to submit questions. So if you're new to Locals, if you're new to Locals and you're not in the Telegram, let us know. We'll give you the Telegram. If you guys want to submit questions for me to ask, just at me and Rob in the Telegram so that to make sure that we see it. So, because if you just throw questions in there, I don't pay attention to Telegram unless you guys actually mention me. I need a mention in order because I just have too much going on. But if you guys do mention me, I try to always respond to anytime somebody mentions.
$5 to the first person who can send 100 at Anthony messages in a row.
Don't even do that.
Yes.
So I want good questions, though. Like, what kind of questions do you think I should ask?
Every question in the Summa Theologiae.
Or even better yet, the number 2 Baltimore Catechism meant for, middle schoolers.
You think so, or you think I should do more like what they think of what's going on with the synod?
I think for each person, do a little, get a feel for their knowledge, their basic knowledge of the faith, get a feel for their opinions on different moral questions, and then get a feel for their opinions on.
See, I'm thinking I want to go and I want to first ask, like, okay, how often do you go to Mass? I want to ask definitely, do you think the church is doing anything to reach out to young men? Do you think the church needs to be more strict in its teachings, or do you think they should loosen their teaching? Like things like that. I'm not saying that wording precisely, but things like that. Like I want to
ask them about the death penalty.
The death penalty is a good question to ask. Immigration.
I'd ask him, what is the Mass? I'd be curious if you're going to get here. That's a good one. Propitiatory sacrifice.
Yeah. Is it a sacrifice? Is it a meal?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the trad parishes are going to get those, like most of the people that I ask there.
Thoughts on co-sleeping? That would be good.
That would be good. That actually would be a funny question to ask.
It would be actually...
be a funny question to ask.
I still feel so bad for Kennedy. I still feel so bad for Kennedy for that night.
Yeah, it was awkward for him.
Yeah,
but you know what? He told his story.
I remember tuning in. And I was just like, "What am I watching?"
Did we ever find the original video on that? Like, shouldn't it be on my Twitter?
I don't know.
If you didn't delete it, it should be.
I didn't delete it.
I'm pretty sure I downloaded it. Like, because I do that with all of our shows right now.
We should find that and put it up on Locals for the local supporters, man. Like that.
So when people wonder why we always talk about co-sleeping,
there's so many new subs that, like, they're probably like, what the hell are they even talking about?
IVF. With
IVF.
Alabama. That's a good one.
Dude, these are good. Like, it'll be interesting to see what people think on these questions. And I'm not going to, like, ridicule them or anything. I'm just going to ask them what their thoughts are.
Yeah,
I'll ask husbands, okay, rate your wife 1 to 10. just because you see all those videos of women when you... I should ask Catholic women, rate yourself 1 to 10.
Oh, my God.
And see if any of them have humility.
You know what, though? You could ask questions like along the lines of, like, who makes the major decisions in your household? You know, just stuff like that, too.
All right. Let's really think of good questions here, because these videos will blow up. Nobody's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's doing this. So, like, all the man on the street stuff you see from Catholics are like people ambushing the bishop and asking him stuff. But, like, nobody's just going out and doing these Pew research. I'm going to look up some of the Pew research questions.
Yeah.
We'll see what the Pew research questions are, and we'll come up with a good 10 question survey. We'll come up with 10 questions and just ask people 10 questions. We'll ask the Telegram what they think of the questions, which ones we'll pick, and we'll weed through them.
What's nice is if you have, of the 10 questions, say 3 or 4 kind of different threads, you know, so like a few questions on this, a few questions on the other. Then if you interview, say, 10, 15 people, well, then we can make 4 or 5 different videos, each video on a subject.
Yeah. I think we should do, each video should have the Sordo Parish versus the Triad Parish.
Don says, nobody's doing this. It's exactly what Anthony thought when he thought of trivia. They're not going to forget Anthony.
All right,
fair point.
We do have to do trivia. All right, we got to do trivia. All right, man, we're going to wrap this one up.
Paul is wondering how he joins on Telegram. Paul, I don't want to just put the link in the chat because there could be people who aren't subscribed to Locals on Locals right now watching. If you're on Twitter, Paul, email me at robert@avoidingbabylon.com and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I want to make sure the people that pay for Locals have the Telegram link. I mean, that's because that's where we communicate more than Locals. Like, most people use the Locals chat. We don't really use the Locals chat. Oh, we use Telegram.
And if there was ever, this is actually Don's idea. If there was ever a time to talk to Kevin, ask him those same 10 questions, then each of these videos, we could have a clip of Kevin answering that question too. Kevin James.
Oh, Kevin James.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just tell him what you're doing. You're asking average Catholics these questions.
I don't know if he'd be comfortable even being filmed at a parish like that. But maybe if he sees me videoing other people, we could just sneak in a little shot of him in there and just be like, look who's at our parish.
Who's going to be filming it?
Either my son or Joe Boca.
Okay, cool. That'd be cool.
You should get Joe and you should have him ask some questions. Just so we can get him on the channel again.
Yeah, I'm going to invite him on. I miss that kid.
Yeah, miss Joe.
I see him. I mean, I see him. I see him at Mass on occasion, but my son said he'll do it with me. So I'll either do it with my son, but if sometimes he's got stuff going on and he can't make it, and I'll just ask Joe, give Joe something to do. He likes stuff like that too. Like he likes, you know, going and like seeing how un-Catholic people are.
We are being reminded that
he likes pointing out how people aren't actually Catholic, even though they say they are.
We're being reminded that someone paid $50 to hear some banjo tonight.
Oh, none of my banjos. None of my banjos are tuned. They're all like out of tune.
Okay, how about this? No. Let's see the single action army.
Oh, you want to see that? Well, can you? You can show that on locals, right?
On locals,
yeah, yeah. You can show that on locals.
Okay, cool. Yeah, okay. I'll bring it out. I'll bring that out for okay. sure. All right, let's just give it. Me a second.
Yeah. I gotta go in early tomorrow. Ugh, I hate when I gotta go in early. It's always on a freaking Friday too. It's so annoying.
Yeah, I have to drive down to the Minneapolis area tomorrow night, 4 hours.
I have to figure out how to set. Are you guys gonna do a show during the 3 days of darkness? The 3 days
of darkness are gonna start. You know, I'll turn off all my lights and I'll just have candles surrounding me as we record.
Oh man,
bro, what I'm gonna do, because I'm you know right in the line of this thing. I'm gonna go out and like film a video with it going on behind me. But I'm thinking about doing like some kind of comedy sketch, pretending that I'm an evangelical again. So,
oh like yes. That.
Wait, what are you gonna do? What did
I miss? I'm gonna the eclipse is right over my house, like directly over my house, and so I'm gonna go out in the field and I'm gonna pretend like I'm an evangelical right as it's going over, and I'm gonna do a comedy sketch.
Have a few people in the camera frame too, and then have the like camera pan away and then pan back, uh-huh. and like a couple of them are gone. Oh no, they were raptured.
That would be funny. That would be funny. We should do a fake rapture video and then tell all the Protestants, you guys missed it. You guys got left behind.
We told you guys. We told you.
I can always send it to you guys and you can upload it on the channel if you want, and I can upload it on.
Well, I mean,
too.
It's yours. You don't
want to. I'm just saying if you want. So just for some funny. But okay, let me show you the single action army. So this was, for people who don't know, we were talking about firearms today in the chat. So this was my first firearm I purchased. Right, this is a 1873 Colt 45. Right, single action army. Right, one thing that's really cool about this firearm particularly is that when you shoot it, right, it's one of those firearms that, aside from the fact that it has just like a really appeasing, you know, appealing and like satisfying kick, right? It's not too extreme like a lot of modern revolvers and stuff. What's interesting about this gun, though, is that these were around before safeties, if you will. And yeah, so as an example,
carry that on an empty chamber.
Exactly. So, right, everybody who's watched Westerns, or I'm a huge Western fan, but one of the biggest inaccuracies about modern Western films. Well, people could do that, but that was like dangerous. So here's the thing. So like, it has six rounds, right? Six chambers. But what happens is that when you pull back the hammer, don't worry, it's unloaded. When you pull back the hammer, right? And then you pull the trigger to where the hammer rests down.
Yep.
Since there's no safety bar that comes up like in a modern firearm, what ends up taking place is that this point right here, right? The hammer itself rests directly on the primer of a bullet, which means that if you were to, say, have six rounds in the chamber, and bang it, yeah.
If you're galloping on a horse.
Yeah, galloping on a horse. If you were to take a stick, whack it, whatever, right, it's going to go off. And so back in the old Western days, right, that's why you put one on, you only load in five rounds, and you pray that you don't get drunk because you might shoot your feet off or something. So, but yeah, this was the first firearm I got. Pretty good.
Do you watch Grand Thumb at all?
Oh, no. I know what it is, but I haven't watched it now.
You're not going to get it, but Joe Boturf wants you to ghost that trigger.
Oh, okay.
What does that mean?
You just pull the trigger to see how strong of a trigger pull it is.
Can you damage your gun by doing that without, when there's no ammo in it?
Older guns, there are some you can, but modern guns.
Yeah, modern, not really. I mean, it wouldn't be that big of an issue, but yeah, Colt 45s, they're great. I actually do use this when I carry open carry, because you can open carry.
I mean, that's not the effective. That's a modern remake that uses modern cartridges, right? That's not using the cap and ball that it would have.
Well, so yeah, so Colt 45, what's unique about this firearm, as well as the 1873 Winchester that came out simultaneously with this, they're both chipped in 45 Colt, and these were the first, the first popular rounds that were an actual cartridge. So in the Civil War, they used those like old Dragoon pistols where you would have to literally load the bullets in like this, and then pull down on a hammer that would pull it down into this, and you'd have to put in like grease and powder, all kinds of complicated stuff. This, no, it's just one bullet. You slide it into the side of the chamber, cock it back, take fire. And so, yeah, it's pretty good. So, but yeah, I would, if someone was to take a Dragoon pistol and use that as their conceal and carry, that'd be hilarious. I don't know where you put it, but have fun.
So you have open carry. That's the gun you carry when you have open carry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, open carry.
When I open carry, I'll open carry my 40, my 1911. Mm-hmm. Just because it's the cool one.
Do you get a lot of people talk to you about it, Nick, when you carry it?
I do. So there's a fair amount of people who conceal and carry in Texas, but it's not as many, at least in my area, that open carry. And so when I'm like walking down the street or I go into like a flea market or something and I have a Colt 45 on a holster on my side, they're just like, yo, what is going on? And plus, you guys probably don't know this, but I also wear boots everywhere. I wear cowboy boots everywhere. And so it just is the quintessential.
Rob, we got to get down to Texas, dude. We got to go down to Texas hang with Nick.
you guys come hang out with me. It'd be fun. I have a massive.
We got to go down and hang with Nick one night. Well, one weekend or something.
Or if we go to the Three Hearts pilgrimage. I'll have to get a cool gun to open carry during that.
Yeah, that'd actually be pretty cool. So sling an AR.
How will you do that, though?
What do you mean?
Like crossing
state lines? That's in Oklahoma, right, Nick?
Yeah, it's in Oklahoma, which I think has like.
Oklahoma has constitutional carry for anyone. Well, anyone of age.
You'd have to drive there, though.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, you can fly with guns. It's a pain.
Pain so in
I probably
the
would
ass,
just
right?
drive. But every state from here down to there is constitutional carry, so I wouldn't have to worry about it.
I got to get the hell out of New York, man.
I was about to say that. It's like, yo, Anthony, you guys have like the most draconian gun laws.
Well, Nick, why do you think part of the reason I'm doing this show is like hoping that one day it gets big enough that I can afford to leave my job and get the hell out
Everyone
of New York?
Everyone tip this locals account so that Anthony can escape New York.
I mean, dude, if we ever got big, it might work out that way. Me and Rob could move close to each other and do this in person. That's the dream.
Yeah,
like that's the dream. Like
Rob's got a guy out of Minnesota too. You both are in blue states. Get out.
Yeah. Minnesota is getting worse and worse. Yeah, it's still okay for gun stuff, but not for much longer.
The dream is maybe in 3 years or something. We're big enough, and Rob and I could do this in person, and we have a business, and we do it like that. Like that's you know, I mean, it's going to take a while. It's not something that's happening overnight, but
no,
you guys get so big that
not unless we got some of that sweet Vatican money, like Lofton.
Well, the thing is, we're very we're dedicated to it. We do it 2 days a week, no matter what. Sometimes 3 days, like we don't miss, man. Like if we do, it's like a special reason that we miss. Somebody's on vacation or something. But like typically, we don't just blow the show off, man. We take it pretty seriously and keep doing it. And it's growing slowly but steady. And then every once in a while, like March was the biggest month we ever had. We had 2,000 new subscribers. More views than we've ever had. So, and now it's starting to dip down. Like it gets so depressing when you see like the climb, and you're just getting so many new subs. And then all of a sudden you just see it drops 100. Cause we were getting 100 new subs a day, every day in March.
You know what you got to do to like solve that, right though, Anthony? You got to put a ski mask on and rap and pretend that you're a theologian.
No, we're doing the man on the street interviews and we're going to try and get some new attention for the channel.
Thank you, Paul.
Wait, Anthony, have you done this yet? I don't think you have, but like, have you gone into Times Square with the whiteboard yet and done
that?
No,
I need to though. I really do need to. Let me tell you something. Dude, Midtown Manhattan now is scary to be in. Like when we went for the Easter Vigil, Midtown Manhattan, my wife didn't want to get out of the car. It's gutter. Dang. Like it's just immigrants everywhere, dude. It's like nothing I've ever seen. It looks
that's why you carry a gun. Oh, wait.
Yeah, I can't. So like if you go uptown, you go to the wealthier neighborhoods, it's still nice. You know, if you go down into the village and stuff, it's still nice. But Midtown Manhattan, especially when that sun goes down, man, it's you don't want to get out of the car. Like we went to an Irish pub in Midtown after the vigil, and I made sure I got a parking spot right in front. Like I didn't want my daughters walking on the street there. It's just loaded with freaking migrants, man. It's crazy.
Oh, that's great. And you know what? So many of those people who are citizens in New York are still going to vote blue.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though they got punched in the face by a migrant or a black person, they'll still vote blue. But all right, let's wrap this up, man. We got 4 minutes left on the stream anyway. I got to get to bed.
Sounds good. All
right, so Monday.
What are we doing? Yeah, Monday.
Monday, we're going to do the DDF document.
Yeah.
And I'll have a few other.
I'm going to definitely send you guys, I don't know if you guys saw, but like there was someone took a snapshot of like one of the, I think Vatican videos or something like that, where Michael Lofton's in it with his wife and he's giving this cheesy smile.
No. Yeah. We got to do some funny stuff on the stream.
I got to go find it.
Yeah, dude, if you have anything you think it'll be funny to play, just send it over.
Bro, I got like a zillion and one Protestant cringe stuff I could send you.
Well, I always have that. That's unlimited. Like that's easy. Whenever I'm in, like, whenever I'm like, oh, I can't find a video to stop, I just go look for Protestant cringe. There's always something you
can play. Or he'll tweet out some troll tweet and just to get responses.
Yeah, just to get a little rise out of people. And remember, the thief on the cross was saved by the intercession of Mary. So, all right, let's get out of here.
Okay, here we go.
To do what you're saying, to think that there's like a magical